Session number 874.
Mr. Larry Gaines, Reel 1. When did you join the Army, Mr. Gaines?
1927.
Can you tell me the reason why you joined?
Oh, I was attracted to the Army. Being born and bred amongst the Army, I wanted to travel.
Whereabouts were you born?
Farnborough, Hants, near Aldershot.
Did that have anything to do with you joining?
No, not really, no.
Your father didn't come from an army family?
No, they were civilians, they hadn't seen service. Well, brothers were in the service, but not parents. Not father, anyway.
What was the reaction of your parents when you joined?
Well, at that time, my parents had passed on, the time I was that age. It was only my sister and her husband left. They were in the regiment, the Dorsets. So, and they went to Germany, and I was naturally wanted to follow on, be with them. So I joined the same regiment and went out to Germany with them.
So, your sister and your brother-in-law were quite pleased, I suppose.
Oh, yes. They wanted me to do that, you see. They asked me what I thought about it, and I thought it was a good idea. So, I packed up the job and enlisted.
What was your job?
I was a shop assistant, catering, on the catering side.
Had you travelled before you joined the army? Had you been abroad?
No, never. No, that was my ambition, to get abroad.
Had you specifically wanted to go to India?
No, it wasn't in my mind. I mean, India was farthest from my thoughts. I would join the army and it was something, you know, you join up. I went to Germany, that was a big thing. I hadn't been across the channel before. And until I got back to Portland, when we came off the Rhine, India was mentioned. And I still wasn't attracted, you know, it didn't mean nothing to me, India, another place like Germany kind of business. Not until we got near Port Severn, the weather changed and it was quite hot. And then I realised we were going somewhere. Oh, this is smashing, too good to be true. Top deck, sleep all night, lovely. And that was my first feeling of India, the heat. I really enjoyed that.
When did you get to know that you were being posted to India then?
Oh, about a month before when it came up in detail, the draft. We knew there were drafts going so often, and I knew I was on this draft for December from Portland.
Which year would that be?
1929. And I arrived in India 1930. From one year to the other. That's right, January 1930, got to Murat.
Can you remember how you first got to know about your posting? Can you remember what happened? How you first got the news that you were being posted to India?
Well, no, not really. It's a thing that you're sitting in your barrack room on your bed. I mean, somebody walks in the door and says, "Here, we're for Ponky Land." You know, it used to be the language slang. Bloke says, "Who's for Ponky Land?" And he turned to me and said, "You needn't shout. You're on top of the list." So I went out, looked at detail. There we were, India bound. Something I've always looked back on. There, I mean, Germany was nothing. It was this atmosphere, you know, same kind of thing, but India was totally different.
What did you know about India before you went? Had you got to know anything about the country from school or reading or anything like that?
Well, I only what you what you learn at school, that's all, which doesn't really sink home, not like actual being there. I mean, you learn at school, when you leave school, well, India's farthest from your mind of what you see on the cinema or television. That was the only thing, really, but there was nothing to attract me to it. But now, since I've been there, although I've been home a few years now, how many? 40-odd? I've still got the urge. I'd like to go back to India. And if ever I won football pool, I'd go back through the years and I'd travel over the same ground that I've been on. You know, especially up in the Himalayas. Because when I say India, I always look to the Himalayas, not the plains. That was no attraction to me, but the thing that fascinated me in India was the hill stations, because it was so quiet. And I'm a quiet sort of chap, I like things quiet. I really enjoyed it. You could go out hiking, camping in the hills, you know, on your days off, or a 48-hour pass. We used to go down the riverbeds, camp out. Really enjoyed it.
You used to camp in dried up riverbeds in the hills.
Yes, well, they were very, you know what riverbeds are like out there, so long, and an ideal camping ground, because you had the small rivers to go in, swim if you wanted to, which we used to do quite often. Oh, while I'm thinking about it, there's that cafe. I won't stretch because this.
Was there any danger in camping in these riverbeds at all? I mean, could you be surprised by any sudden floods?
Well, particular spots where we were in the riverbeds, like Dehradun and Solan. Yes, if you had a sudden storm, I should say you would be caught out. But we were lucky. The point is there, with these riverbeds, they're so vast, you know, they go for miles and twist and turn, that occasion there, my sister I told you about, they came out to India. I'd been out there about 6 years then. They came out to India, and whilst up at Solan, they went for a hike, as they called it, with his family. And they went down the riverbeds. They got lost, which is possible, because the riverbed is not just one continuous flow through the mountains. It breaks off in various directions, you know. And apparently he lost track, so we had to go out hunting for lights and whatnot. We found them. It wasn't far away, but enough to scare them, you know.
You mean your unit had to, part of your unit?
No, just ourselves, my pals and that, you know. And I went up the quarters and they weren't there. And it was getting a bit around dusk. Well, it was getting to the time when the old jackal started, you know, pie hiking about. I got a bit worried. And we happened to see striking matches, that's what he was doing, that's how we spotted him. But he wasn't far away. As a matter of fact, he was in this riverbed, and about a mile outside, if he could have climbed that, he would have come straight to his quarters, Merry Quarters. But he didn't know that.
What does pie hiking mean? You said the jackals were pie hiking.
Well, it's slang again, you know. I could have
said been calling
yes,
out.
I could say the jackals were belly aching, you know, usual barrack room slang, that's all. And when you're talking about these things, well, I find even to this day you start coming out because it fits in with the You know what I mean? It fits in with that...
With a subject.
...picture. Hmm. So you've got to use that lingo to get hold of what you're talking about.
Could I ask you about your preparations for going out to India? Did the army in Germany you were in when you got to know...
No,
Portland. Were you in England?
Hmm.
Did the army in England give you any special kit whilst you were in England for going out to India, can you remember?
Yes, KD outfits. Khaki drill. Usual tropical equipment that you wear, you know, slacks, KD slacks and jacket. And we got the rest of the complete kit when we got to India.
What was that? What
such
was the rest
as house tops and the types of putties you wear, you know. But all we had, I think, was just a KD jacket, trousers and topi.
What were hose tops?
The topi.
Did you say hose tops?
Oh, hose tops are those that, in India, at home, them days, we wore putties. But when you got to India, you had your boots, putty, and the house top. Short putties, because you wore shorts, you see. And just turned down, which was ours, was green. Just turned down over the top of the putty. Well, from there, like a sock. And we were KD shorts.
Like a sock without a bottom.
That's right. Hmm. Well, the putty went up under it, you know. Quite a treat, I tell you, after these putties and slacks we used to wear over here.
So you were glad of this equipment once you got to India? This,
oh, yes.
This uniform. You found it comfortable, did you?
Yes, very comfortable. Well, I'll say comfortable. As time went on, though, it was comfortable about a day after the Dobie had it.
Then what happened?
Well, when the Dobie had it, everything used to get starched and used to come out like cardboard. Because when you put them on, everything was stiff, you know. And I'll say after a couple of hours, it got sitting about in it and whatnot. It was all right. But the hot weather, when you had a big parade and you put on a clean suit, KD... That was, you knew you had it on by the time you come off parade. You know, perspiration and whatnot. But that was the only...
Did it cause chafing on your body?
Well, no. Well, I didn't have any, at any rate. No, because it was, I don't know what they used in the laundry, but when I say laundry, it's nothing like our laundries. When you go down the riverbed and see them knocking hell out of your shirt, civilian shirt too, you know, on the rocks. But it's marvellous. Everything comes back perfect, clean. I smile when I see all these adverts on television. What that would do out there, Purcell on the rocks. No, clothing was all right. We were quite comfortable.
Did you find that the topis were... essential, or did you not wear them?
Oh, yes, you had to wear your topi. At one time, I think, even what they call spine pads had to be worn. Not in my time. I didn't wear any. But I think there were occasions, I don't know why, where it was in particular... area, and there wouldn't be a particular area because heat is heat, it's all the same heat everywhere, but I know they used to wear spine pads before I went to India, but when I got out there we didn't wear them.
You just heard other men talking about
yes.
The fact that they used to be worn.
Well, I'd seen these spine pads, you know, in stores, and oh, we don't use them anymore, you know, so that was a thing of the past. No, all we had was a topi during the day.
But the spine pads were still in the army stores, were they?
They were, yes. They were still, they were not issued. There was no need for it, I think. I should imagine they would use them for such a chap, like if a sentry was in a particular spot, like the guard room's not in the shade, or it's, and you've got the sun blazing down all the time, and he's standing there. It could be they would use them then, but I can't think for anything else. Only if a man's standing in the sun, then I think he would need it. But being in the band, I didn't have to stand in the sun. Not that long, at any rate.
So you got this special uniform to go out to India with whilst you were in England. Did you get any other special preparations, like injections or anything of that kind?
Oh, yes. Yes, we had our injections, TAB. We had the first dose, and 10 days after, we had the second dose. And TAB, well, I don't know, but TAB used to... The second dose used to knock me giddy. It does some people, and it doesn't affect others. The amusing part is, you used to see the chaps go in, and they'd get the needle, and they'd come out, and they're bending their arm, and they're doing everything. They think they're getting rid of it, you know, and squeezing it. But it's hopeless. But I know within an hour of having that dose, when I first started having them, within an hour, I've got to get laid out, get the shivers like you get when you've got malaria. Sweats and shivers, terrific, for about an hour. And it wears off, and then I'm okay, except for an ache, you know. But it's surprising, though, you get a six-foot fella, a tough guy, broad shoulders, you know, King Kong effort. He'd be in a queue, be inoculated. And he gets about two away from the needle. This particular inoculation I'm talking about was in India. You get two from the needle, and this doctor, he was a half caste, and he used to throw this. When I say it, not throw it, but he used to shoot it like a dart. There were so many, I mean, doing a couple of hundred people, and he used to go like that, straight into the arm, but it went in this vaccination market, this particular chap. And he pulled it out for it. Next, he said, next one come up, which was this tall fella. Bit of a bully too, he was, you know, in ordinary times. And as this chap pulled the needle out, he saw that the needle was still in this fella's arm walking away. And he just faded, collapsed, passed out. Oh, dear, dear. And we realised what had happened then, because we were laughing, we saw this fella... And we started shouting to him, hey, bring that needle back, want it for the next one. He didn't know he had it, because he didn't, in the vaccination mark, you know, he didn't feel it. But the tough guy, he was on the floor. That was inoculations.
Earlier on, you were saying that about the, some of the men who had had the inoculations used to be flexing their arm.
Yeah.
Was that with the idea of not having any after effects?
Well... I mean, you'd see a chap come straight out of the MI room, and as soon as he's had the needle, he's doing everything. He thinks it's possible where that needle has gone in. If he's quick enough, he can squirt it out again, squeeze it out, you see. But it's impossible.
Oh, I see, to squeeze the liquid
yes,
out.
Yes, trying to get it out.
But why did he want to do that?
Oh, so they don't get no after effects, I suppose. But it's hopeless. They didn't realise, I mean, that needle was there, and when that fluid left the needle, I mean, it penetrated. Nobody on earth would squeeze it out again, but it was a usual thing. Every inoculation used to see that. But I think it's a good thing, because I never had any illness all the time in India.
You were never sick at all?
No. Mind you, we used to be inoculated every year. It wasn't just this once, going to India. Oh, no, you had that every year.
Against what?
Any disease, malaria or whatever. Same one, TAB. Because there used to be a lot of dodgers that didn't like it. But It was a good thing, and I think for any man to try and dodge the inoculation or get away with it was stupid. Because she was open to any, you know, disease that might crop up. Well, I believed in that at any rate, and I never dodged any other, because I felt all the time you had those once a year, two doses. TNT, we had that, whatever that is. Don't ask me. TNT. It's all to do with the tropical disease.
You said that you never fell sick yourself, but was that common with the other troops? Did the other troops stay so healthy in the time in India?
Well, yes. You didn't get much illness, not in, in that respect, because... I mean, they were never laying around waiting for the, you know, the heat or something. There was always something going. I mean, as soon as you were up, nights were cold, that was okay. But during the day, you had your parades early in the morning, and you didn't go back and lay about where you could catch anything, you know, if you were really relaxed all the time. You were playing football, hockey, boxing, anything. You had some sport of some kind that took you into the evening when the weather was cool. But I think we were the healthiest human beings going, I think, them days before the war, because we had more sport out there now. What, say, I don't know, these days they fly out, they do exercises and that's it, but we were there, I say, stationary for 2 or 3 years in one station. But you make your own entertainment, you know, all day you're doing something. You're never laying around, you know, waiting for something to crop up. It's, well, the CO commanding officer, they lay on a program, training program. You see, you've got all that, and your sports are linked with the training, so your body's occupied all day. You're not, you can't just go and sit down once it gets hot and say, well, that's it. Like you see the natives of India, they go and crawl under a tree, some of them, that's it. They've got nothing to do. But the only day was Thursdays. And that was a day for cleaning up, cleaning your kit and equipment. We used to call it a day off in the week, but when you finished cleaning your kit, you could get dressed and go where you wanted to.
Did you have Sundays off as well?
Oh, yes, after church pray. Oh, you had to go to church. Well, we did, being band and drums. We had church pray, and we'd come back, because after church pray, which was pretty warm, then we'd go back, lunch, read a book, sleep in the afternoon, Sundays, in the evening, early evening, go out and game tennis or go to the cinema. Pastime, eh?
You said that you didn't fall sick in India, but did you ever have any accidents? Or did anything which necessitated hospital treatment?
No, the only hospital treatment, I think, I had to have when I had this spider I told you about up at Solon, and that was a case of emergency. I mean, then you couldn't say hospital.
What happened then?
Well, it said I had this spider I was telling you about, and it's a thing you couldn't hang about with once you, well, to put you in the pit, I would have to tell you actually. You see, the bungalows in Solon inside are white, all white, distemp in that, huts, wooden huts. And my bed was in a corner, and I was laying there reading one night. We had those three biscuits with coir in, which you slept on. And the beam that goes round this bungalow, I suddenly saw these two big black eyes at the top. And I got my ammunition boot and I threw it up, see, but it vanished. So I said to the boys in the bungalow, I said, where the deuce has that got? So one of the lads, Dinty Moore, he's in London now. He said, well, he said, I shouldn't get back in that bed, Larry. He said, I should rip it apart, make sure. I said, I think I'd better. So I got up and I had blue trousers on, belonging to me, blue suit, uniform, you know, and a khaki shirt. And I ripped open these three biscuits, these coyers, and there was a pile of coir stuck up all around me like that, and I was poking it with a stick. And I was turning round, I said, well, things not here. I said, I can't see it. And all of a sudden, this Welsh boy, Taffy Davis, he shouted, Larry, stand still, for God's sake. And I froze. You know when they say freeze, you freeze. And at the same time as I froze, I had me head that way, you know, to the right. And looking over my shoulder, this one, it was looking right into my eye. The same black eyes I saw up on the beam. And it was, well, it's terrific. Legs, all hairs, you know, black. And it had a big shell for a body. And even then I was saying to myself, Chandler, spider, what the devil is it, you know, because I hadn't seen a tarantula. And they didn't know what to do, so Taffy was across the room, which would be from where the television is to where I am.
A few feet away.
Yeah. And I had me back to him, you see, because he'd spotted it from the back. And this thing had stopped. As I looked round, it stopped. And I could even see those black eyes, you know. Well, I can't explain it. It's a horrible experience. And in the distance, I could hear these chaps shouting to stand still. I was the only one standing still. It was them I was worried about. Although I was frozen like that, I could hear everything, them moving. And I wanted to shout, for God's sake, stand still, you know, but I couldn't speak. And he stood on this kit box, Taffy, and he leaped through the air with this. He was reading a book, a hard book, and he jumped. I've never seen Batman come through the air like he did. He come up through the air like that, and he hit this thing on my back, and it cracked and splattered all over the place, and there's all this black juice came out of this shell, you see. Of course, we were raced straight up to the still on my back, I'm sure, and all, raced me up to the medical up, which was only just round the corner. And he...